How's it? My son keeps stealing my headphones. He keeps playing games with playing with his mates, and he prefers my headphones because it's colored in camo, and I think I don't know what he's up to, but he seems to steal it every time.
Can you hear me clear?
Yeah, no, you're really good, actually. How's, are you getting enough sleep on your long weekend?
Oh, no, it's like every, you know what it's like with a newborn. You've got, like, you know, every couple of hours she's got to get up for a feed. And so I've got to help out, you know. If you don't help out.
Oh, you do, I remember.
You're the bad guy, you know. So you've got to make out like you care. So,
dude, I remember when Taika was small, I tried to be the supportive husband when Tanya got up. I got up with her, and then the problem was we were both toast in the morning, and she just said, "Don't get up, just go to sleep." I need you 100% and awake when I'm not.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
It's funny. Oh man, it's so that's number three, huh?
Number three, bro. It's tough, but
it's so weird because I've always seen you as like the youngest member of the stunt team. And yeah, it's kind of like he's got three kids. He's got more than me.
Yeah, I know. It's funny, yeah, bro. I know. I was actually thinking four, but then me and my wife were like, you know, the first couple of nights were sleepless, so we're like, yeah, maybe this is it, you know, three's enough.
Oh yeah,
plus it's getting expensive, you know.
Oh, it is. Well, today we just it's my daughter's 18th birthday, so we've been reminiscing about you know, the early days, you know, like you know, Tanya said, you know, like basically Taika, you know, we had to pull you out, and Rico, you know, was not an easy birth. And after that, we decided two is enough.
Yeah. Hang on, Bert. I think you've broken up somehow. I'm not sure.
There you go.
Oh, there we go. Yeah.
You're still
sure what happened there.
No, don't worry. I was saying, you know, if somebody gets frozen, don't worry. Just keep going.
Okay. Yeah.
So how does it work? I mean, is your wife at home alone when you're away out of town?
No, well, she's got her parents. Her parents are living here with us, which makes it really, really good. So it's almost like you've got a housemaid or, you know, another helper to help out.
So we found that those years in Wellington, you know, although, you know, all the stars aligned and, you know, that both my parents were gone when the children, when we had our first, and just having Tanya's parents just down the road, you know, it was just like these on-call babysitters, and you know, they would ring us up, when can we have them next, you know, especially because Taika was always such a good kid. And the payoff is good because now I have two children who really appreciate food and they love to cook and all the traits that their grandma sort of passed on to them. And, you know, we're quite proud of our two, and that's in that sense.
No, it's awesome.
So it's really good that we can talk tonight. I'll just introduce you. This is Augie, Stunt Truck. I'm talking to Tony Marsh today.
How's it going?
So, good bro. Let me do the talking for a bit, eh? All right. I know you're going to have your time.
Goodness. Yeah, I know.
So Tony's, I was 24 when I met Tony. Tony was a teenager. He came onto a show and was one of our doubles on Young Hercules, right? Was that your first job?
Nah, first job was Hercules.
How old were you?
I was 16.
We had no idea, because I know that Cheesecake and a few other people came in their school uniforms on some days because they're all connected to some older stunt guys. Yeah. So you were 16 when you did your first job.
16. Yeah. Well, was I was actually 14 when I did my first actual stunt, but once I was 16, I was full time.
So okay, go back to when you were 14.
So when I was 14, it was funny because it was just when the TV series Hercules was around, so Xena wasn't around or anything like that. It was just Hercules, and I remember Peter Bell was the stunt coordinator back then, and I was brought on as like an extra, like as a I think it was just like a peasant, some sort of peasant, as an extra. And then because my martial art instructor was a stuntman and he got me the job as an extra, Peter Bell said, "Oh, is Tony all right to do the stunt?" And all it was a Irish whip. Just taking a cell and doing an Irish whip. And Sam just said, "Oh, I'll just run it by Tony and see if he's okay with it. But he should be all good. He's, you know, Sam, he's like, yeah, Tony's pretty tough." And so Sam asked me and I said, "Oh, yeah, all right, I'll give it a go." And then I ran in and took the hit and did the Irish whip. And I remember landing thinking, I hit the ground so hard, and I was like, "Oh man, really? Is this what it's about?" Because there weren't any mats, you know. So yeah, and then I got up and Peter was like, "Can you go again?" And I was like, yep, I can go again." Thankfully it was only two takes. So yeah, but that was when I was 14, and then a couple of years later, Peter asked Sam, who was my martial art instructor, if I could audition to get on full time. So there was a bunch of us audition, and I managed to be one of the ones that got on.
Who else was starting up at that time?
So at that time there was the stars, the superstars. So there's Sean Button, not all power. Who else? Oh, Jonathan Costello. And I think that's it. So yeah, no, it was good.
That's early to mid. That's early to mid 90s, eh?
Yeah, that's right.
So you're 16 then. How old are you now? Have you reached 40 yet?
I'm 40 now. Yeah. 40 years old, mate, the book.
Wow. So you've been doing it now for like 25, 26 years.
Yeah.
And I'm 10 years ahead of you. And I think when you started, we were all so young. You know, I think I started when I was 23.
Yeah.
And, you know, and all of a sudden I became a veteran very quickly because the industry just exploded during those early days.
Yeah, that's right.
What was going on? Did you just think that this is it? This is going to be what I'm going to be doing now? Stuff school.
Yeah, I know. Like, when you're earning more money than your teachers, what actually happened was, like, once I started full time, you know, as you know, full time is, you know, you might work 3 days a week. You know, it's not like every single day, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it just started off where the attendance at school became less and then less and then less. And then the teachers were like, "You know what? You're better off not coming back. You're better off just sticking, you know, like don't even turn up." And so I was like, okay, So I decided just to leave school at 16 and just stick it at stunts. So
How did you handle all that money that you're earning at that age?
It's interesting, like all that money, I didn't have many people to look up to, like my dad and that, like, because what had happened was, like, my parents, they didn't look after me from the age of 12 onwards. So Sam Williams, who was the guy, my martial art instructor, who got me into stunts, he's the one that looked after me. So I stayed with him for years. And he was sort of the person I looked up to. But I didn't have like any guidance to do with money or anything like that. So in my younger years, earning all that money, I'd just like spend it, like, you know, shouting friends, buying this, buying that, saving nothing and spending pretty much most of it, you know? And it wasn't until, seeing some of the older stunt guys, the ones that have been around, you know, a bit longer, you know, just looking at them, seeing what they had done with money. So that's what made me like think, oh, maybe I should start saving this stuff. And so that's what I did.
Well, I remember that you used to have a really flash Mazda.
Yeah, it was a Nissan.
Nissan, right.
There Nissan. You go. Yeah. Nissan. Spent too much money on that. Way too much money.
Just so you know, we were all quietly jealous of you that you could spend money on a car while some of us were trying to pay a mortgage.
Yeah, I know. I know. Oh. Yeah.
I just want to shout out to Sam Williams, who, the same guy that your mentor, he was also one of my mentors, a really caring individual who would take the shirt off his back if I needed one. And he was the original Hercules double. He doubled Kevin Sorbo. He went on to one of the hard men of the industry, and who went on to become a very successful stunt coordinator. And he's still in the industry, but more in broadcasting, a very talented technician in other aspects. A guy just couldn't, he couldn't really just say no to anything. He just had a way of doing it and muscled his way through some. And boy, you know, that body of his took a pounding, and just one of the original tough nuts of the game, really.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Amazing. I've worked on so many projects with him, and in those early days, and you know, I always remember just being in Queenstown, hanging him off the side of the cliff, and you know, pretty scary position, you know. And but you know, I think back how simple some of the rigs were, and him dangling down the side of those mountains, just absolutely just didn't, you know, complete trust, but tough as nails. Ah.
And those are the days of wires and crimped wires, right?
Oh boy. Well, I cringe when I think
no tech.
Some of the stuff, you know, and
crazy,
you know, they worked, but when I think back on it, we never really stressed the system out a lot more. And also we can do a lot more today because the people are a lot more trained and prepped as well.
Yeah.
We'll be able to push the boundaries a bit more, but, and where we've lacked in, perhaps some toughness, we've made it up in, creative, imaginative, and I think some fun way of doing things too. Things certainly don't hurt as much as they used to, but it's certainly nice to have all that knowledge around you now, isn't it? Especially with people getting a lot more exposure to other ways of doing things and
easier ways, smarter ways, I guess.
Smarter ways. You know, I can just think of now, just to back in the day, if there was no mats around, we'd just go ahead and fight and, you know, and hit the ground. And if somebody wanted something, you'd throw a bag of hay or something there, and you could always tell that the guy forgot his pads.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I never had a pad bag until I was about 20. So, you know, everyone would be like, have you got your pad bag? And I was like, no. In fact, I never had a pad bag, a proper one, until I was about 24 or 25.
So 10 years in the business and then you got your first pad bag.
No, dude, I remember the story going over on Alexander in Morocco and Thailand, and Gary Powell, he was pulling all of our pad bags, everyone's pad bags, out of the container. And like, you know, some of the guys were having huge pad bags, and then he pulled out this little backpack and it was like, whose is this? And I was like, it's mine. And he goes, what is it? And I'm like, it's my pad bag. And he goes, you're kidding me, right? And I'm like, no, I'm not kidding. And, but that made me think, yeah, maybe, you know, I should invest a bit more in looking after my body, you know.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Which I did. So.
When did he enter the business? Was it the same time or did he come a bit later?
No, he was hassling me for years. Get me in. And he was working at a hotel in South Auckland. And yeah, I said, I'll get you in, don't worry. And then there was another opportunity like a couple of years later of another like audition, and everyone would put, you know, all their mates forward, and I put Daniel and my other friend forward, but only Daniel got in. So, and there that was the era, I think it was Daniel, Steve McCullen,
Slade?
Bronson.
Wow.
Bronson. Yeah. So, yeah. No, I think Slade was in. I can't remember when he got in.
Wow. It's absolutely fascinating, isn't it? Because some of those guys now are still, well, all those guys whose names that you mentioned are still in the business.
Still going.
Are doing really well. And was there any doubts? Did you have doubts? I mean, the work was intermittent, and the work was, you never know when you're next required next, and you didn't know whether you were going to, it wasn't the production's fault, it was just the way the stunt department was structured. Were you I left the agency, of course, and to a little bit later to sort of carve my own, because I couldn't keep working like that. Did you care about the way it was, the intermittent work, and you never knowing when you're going to get your next job?
No, I think being so young, well, there's a few factors to that one. Cause well, like, like being young, like young teenager, you know, you sort of, yeah, you're pretty free, you know, like I felt more like I'd be a lot more freer than someone who would like have a big mortgage or, you know, have a lot of, like even certain like dependents or kids or, you know, things like that. But for me, it was just about, I didn't worry about it. But number two, like, you know, like I wasn't, as a Christian in the industry, I just trust in God, you know, and, just trust that, you know, that the work was going to come, you know. And it did, you know, it did. So that's basically it. Yeah.
And was that belief right there from Christian belief? Did that sort of come in later in your teenage years, or was that already part of your upbringing?
So my upbringing was, Yeah, like my parents went, I wasn't brought up a Christian or anything like that. It was an experience I had when I was seven. But that, like, you know, when you're in the, when you're born again as a Christian, you start getting stronger and stronger in faith and trusting in God. So I the trust didn't happen until like late teens, you know, and early 20s. So that's when it really started to make sense, you know.
Yeah, sure. The so since you started in the business, and I remember what coming out of book outside, and we looked at each other with a bit of a smirk on our face.
Yeah,
and I remember I think Ben was saying, "Did it just feel like that we've?" You know, as a group, you know, watching that big movie that we've all been part of, and not long after that, a whole bunch of guys were asked to go to Alexander, I think.
Yeah, that's right. On,
which is, you know, the demand for Kiwi stunties started to happen. You know, that was there, and then Kingdom of Heaven. I think some people went and did and worked on that, and yeah. People started to leave and go offshore. Ben went to Australia not long after that, and
King Arthur I think, as well.
Yeah, Arthur, that's right. A whole bunch of stuff. When did you start to feel the confidence that, yeah, maybe, you know, like, when did it change from, you know, go through the teenage years and then you just, did it start to feel like you've arrived as well in the business and as a person that this could something you could carry on doing for a little bit longer? And has that ever occurred that you'd, have you ever thought about leaving it?
Oh, dude, I've tried to leave. I've tried to leave the industry a couple of times, but about 10 years ago, I tried to leave. And, it's funny, like when I tried to leave, I just got more phone calls than I've ever had. And I'm just like, you know, so I'm praying and I just know that the Lord's telling me, hey, get back in there. And I'm like, okay. So it's just, trust me, I've tried to leave twice, like two clear times out of the industry. And just as I do it, I'm getting like phone calls left, right and center. And I'm thinking, okay, all right. So I end up coming back, you know, straight away. So, but now I know that, you know, I'm supposed to be in the industry. Like, and yeah, it's because of that, I know that, yeah, it's just a lot more enjoyable, you know, like one of the times that I thought about leaving was after The Hobbit, because The Hobbit was so draining, mentally. So I thought, oh man, I think, you know, there has to be something else out there, you know? And that's when I tried to leave. And then after that, I just started getting like so many phone calls and then, here I am still going, you know? So, but yeah, it's funny cause like,
you know,
I was just going to say, I've had heaps of opportunities that I haven't taken up as well, like over the years, you know, that maybe if I had taken them up, they could have led to like huge things. But, one thing you should never do is think like that, you know, that, you know, the opportunities that you've passed up could have been something, you know, or not. So, yeah.
Well, it's easy for regret to come in, you know, if only, or if could have, yeah, those sort of thoughts could come in. Hey, is there something you'd encourage your children to do?
I mean, only if they really wanted to. Only if they really wanted to. I think my younger son, he seems like he's got it, you know, like he's got something that he's got like a confidence that I can't like explain, you know, but I've experienced it. And if he was to say, you know, Dad, I want to do stunts, you know, then I would say okay. But I think if my older son said I want to do stunts, I'd be like, you know, trying to like guide him away from it. But if he said yes, then so be it, you know.
I think it's interesting what you're saying. When I think 10 years ago when both my children were younger, I was a bit more protective of shying them away from this.
Yeah.
That they can look up to apart from their old man, their father, for guidance, you know. And I think of Taika particularly, there's so many good women that are really close to us that can be that. And even the men around, you know, trust them into their care, especially cohorts out there, there, because they've, you know, they've all been hungry. They've gone through the years and definitely some shared experiences. And it's going to be incoming.
Yeah.
You know, just watch me work. I don't know what that actually means in the mind of an 18-year-old, but we'll see.
I'll find out one day.
And it goes so quick, man. It goes so quick. And hey, Tony, if you were to have a conversation with your 17, 18-year-old self,
yeah,
you know, what three things would you have told yourself?
Oh, all right. In terms of what, the industry or?
Yeah, this industry, what this thing you're getting into.
Number one would definitely be honesty. Just don't be afraid to just be honest, you know, like it could be concerning anything, could be concerning, you know, the big stunts coming up and, you know, you're not feeling it, you know, you're not feeling it, but you still do it, you know, but just to say no, it doesn't mean that, you know, that you're frowned upon, you know, and even if you are, you shouldn't care about it anyway. So yeah, just be honest. That's one. Two, don't look at yourself. Don't like trust too much in yourself. And three, look to those that that have been tried and tested in the industry. So, you know, those that are in higher positions that have been, you know, tried and tested and look to gain as much insight from them or experience to do with the industry. And just basically... Yeah, try and learn from them and see how they got there, you know, because, you know, like you should always be trying to look at guys that are, have the life experience or the industry experience so you can learn from their mistakes and try and better on them, you know. So, yeah, those are the three things.
You said don't be afraid to say no. I think it's really a good point you made there. And I remember during that period, it was really hard for people to say no, that they can't do something, you know, or even just, they're just not ready. And,
yeah, that's right.
And they would be worried that they'd be frowned upon. And what I've learned over the time too, and is in a people that are probably, be frowning upon you are probably the people you're not going to end up working with anyway. It kind of fixes itself.
Yeah.
Those people who are the assholes of the industry, who frown upon you, and or they change over time when they themselves are. I think those people sometimes they just forget that they were in that position once. And
yeah, well, when people used to turn down stunts, like when I was younger, I used to frown upon them thinking, well, what's wrong with these guys? Like, you know, but as I grew and matured, then I realized, okay, they're actually more mature than I, you know, like, so yeah, that's something I learned like over time in the industry. And
I remember my wife used to work with the recovering alcoholics. He used to run these outdoor adventure programs for them, and she said something really awesome. And you know, so much of what she did was encouraging people to do something new and to challenge themselves. And it was always going, go, 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 give it a go, give it a go, you can do it. And also, in some of the cases of the recovering alcoholics, this one guy in particular said, no, I can't do this. And the penny dropped for Tanya. She said, you know, saying no was just as empowering for this one person. He'd out of saying no. And because saying no was actually quite empowering. And Tanya shared that with me, is that sometimes when you say no, it gives you power to determine your future. In the case of the recovering alcoholics,
yeah,
you know, for a lot of them started drinking at a very young age, and they, you know, they, and a lot of it was peer pressure. Yes, yes, I've got to do this, got to do this. And the consequences was, you know, 30 years later, they're in a, they're recovering, you know, alcoholics of several, you know, relationship breakdowns and all that. So, and I think, you know, in those days, and I remember from my own career, when I started to sort of say no, it shaped a lot what people would ask me next time, because they knew I was going to be around in the industry. And I said no to this kind of job. I was offered a much better option, generally one that I would love and enjoy doing.
Yeah.
What was the second one you said? Trust in yourself, or
don't have confidence, like don't trust in yourself in terms of or have too much confidence in yourself, because it can lead to a ego, or you know, or the opposite. It could lead to you looking at yourself and you know, basically just saying, look, I'm not good enough, or you know, anything like that.
Well, so, the one thing that you're absolutely bang, well, I to affirm that when I turned 25, I realized how much I knew nothing in the previous 10 years, you know, how much I, when I got to 21, I realized even how much I did not know. And I thought I knew it all as a teenager.
Well, imagine a teenager in stunts, then it's even amplified, you know?
That's right. So, of course, and you're
right. I was one of the worst. I had like a huge ego, you know.
Wow. That's awesome. And the last one, you know, look to those who have been through it. Try to. Often a good way to. You hear lots of news about people, you know, people often say things about other cohorts. You know, I often concern when people come to, I've been working so-and-so and they do this, they don't do what you do. And it's kind of like, really, is it? And in my head, I'm going, do you say that about me when you go there? And, and you know, so they often say things to make you feel good about hiring them. I don't know where that comes from, but one of the, things I've noticed is that often often a good way to sort of make a call about people is to find out who's around them. You know, the people they have around them and the quality of people they have around them. And you've been in the game now, what, 20 something years, and you know, you worked with everybody. You worked with everybody. How much have you tolerated? Or how much of that is just you have a, and I'm sure your faith plays a from huge, the yeah. heart and its foundational part to it, you know.
Yeah.
How much of that is just, you know, not everybody's perfect, you just got to roll with it, you know, and
well, yeah, I mean, it's you know, I mean, my faith is the foundation of it all, but I started to mature, I just started to see people differently. So like, you know, like you get all these, you know, there's the, you know, the industry's so fickle. You 1 minute you're working for some guy and then you're not working for him anymore. You know, like you just don't know. Like, so like, it's not, like I said, it's not ever looking at yourself yeah, it's interesting. I've always just, yeah, like I said, as I started to mature, I started to see people differently. So not in a bad light, you know, just in a good light, even if they did something like bad or, you know, I just knew that they didn't mean it, you know what I mean? So as I just started to look at everyone differently and yeah, there was no toleration or anything like that. I just, you know, obviously you get your bad days where you're like, you know, but, I think overall it was just maturing. And then, you know, like some, you get these jobs that are quite bad. And you turn to, you're like, you're just like, when's the end date? When's the end date? You know? And it wasn't until I started thinking, hang on, I've got to take one day at a time here because I'm not enjoying this job. So I've got to try and find the enjoyment. But the only way I'm going to be able to do that is just take it one day at a time. And as I took one day at a time, I'd just keep positive and, see everyone in a good light, you know, because I learned, like, there's a few things from a few guys that I learned, you know, that are in higher positions than me, and they always spoke good of everyone. And I was thinking, wow, how can they do that? Like, that's amazing, man. You know, like to speak good of everyone, like all the time. So then I was like, hey, let's give it a go. So that's when, that thing started to change also, you know, like that, just keeping everything positive.
I'm listening and I'm hearing you. I was, you know, for a boy from South Auckland, you've done the rounds, man. I mean, when you look at some of the credits of your films and where you've been able to work, and the people that you've worked with, I mean, I was a bit starstruck to know that you were going to work with Jessica Alba, and you showed off your picture, which I was quite jealous of. And I know you've double jealous.
Sneaky one.
Yeah, I mean, in the early days, that was Ryan Gosling, when we all worked with that, and you doubled him a few times. And when he was still a teenager, another teenager doubling him. Struth, there you go.
Yeah, that's right.
So for some of our listeners, you know, who are coming up into the business. Every once in a while, that's easy to remember in terms of jobs that you've done.
Yeah, oh, sorry, you just broke up. What did you say?
In terms of the last part of it, tell me the jobs that you refer to that you think back on as being memorable for whatever reason it was when you, you know, when you're talking stunts.
Probably like the first Avatar. That was like a film that I enjoyed. I don't know why. It was weird. It was like James Cameron, you know, like he'd just start yelling at me and I'd be like, you know, what is this guy on about? You know, like I just over little things, you know. And then when I realized that that's just him, I decided to enjoy the job and it became like quite stunt heavy. The first Avatar. That's when I started to enjoy it. Like, you know, I was still young and I enjoyed like doing all the gags and things like that. That would definitely be one. And then another one would be Meg. that was with you and under Alan Poppleton. And that was an awesome job in terms of just being, you know, like you're outside most of the time, you know, and the ocean, and it wasn't necessarily huge stunts, but it was just an enjoyable job, you know, like not every job is going to be action packed full of stunts. And this one, that one definitely wasn't, but it was just enjoyable. It was a good team, and it's not, yeah, I mean, it's when you've got a good team, it's that makes it enjoyable as well, you know. So yeah, it was, well, those would be the two ones.
Well, I know that you didn't spare any expenses really when it came to Jason's gear. I mean, he had great wetsuits, and we had a lot of dive gear to play with, and a brand new tank, and lots of time on the boats. And
yeah, that's right. It was awesome.
And it's interesting that you know, it's over 10 years later, and you're back on Avatar Whisper in the last couple of days at the Meg 2 is currently in pre-production, in soft early production.
Yeah.
So that's kind of good news.
Yeah. Yeah, that is good. Where is that? Is that going to be filmed here, or?
It's hard to know. I think it's anybody's guess now. It's where, I think everything births itself, productions like that in LA. So whether they can shoot it in LA, it's a good question, or whether they'll go across the border to abroad, we'll see. Well, it'd be nice to have it back here, but
yeah.
The in terms of both those jobs you talked about were filmed here at home in New Zealand, so that was the perks. Why you can go home either in the weekends or in the evenings. In the case of Meg, was just down the road from you.
Perfect. Yeah.
In terms of, it was awesome. And where's the, in terms of the locations that you've been able to, which ones has been memorable as well? Because you've done a few yeah. Hours.
Probably Jordan. Jordan, that was, that was on Hurt Locker. That would definitely be one of the memorable trips. That was a good one. And, believe it or not, it was on one of your ones as well. Wrecked season 3, up in Fiji. Now that was just awesome, man. So good.
That's not stunt work. That's a couple of stunties at a beautiful place.
Yeah.
Pretending to focus. Yeah.
That was just unreal. I was hoping for season 4.
Well, but, it's funny that, eh? It's, I mean, I normally don't chase TV shows. That one kind of found me, and it was really hard to say no. And, you know, I'm so glad we did it. And look what we did. It was so much fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Bring on those jobs.
Yeah.
What's your routine looking like now? Now you've got family, and you know, you've had to grow up like all of us at some point. And yeah, it's and so what's the routine now? I mean you, last time when I rang you up for, oh, I guess that was when I rang you up for Wrecked, you were training, you're on the floor, BJJ, and so what is, so right now you're working Monday to Friday, and you're flying home on the weekends?
Fly home every weekend.
And wow. And then also, are you finding time to train during work hours in Wellington, or are you having to do that after hours in Wellington?
I was finding time to train, but then I got injured. I injured my neck training. And so I haven't trained like for probably a couple of weeks, you know. But I always try and get a couple of sessions in a week just for fitness, because that's of jiu-jitsu. That is just just to get the fitness level, you know, just to maintain it a little bit. Yeah.
You've got a few cats on that job who are practicing BJJ, is that right? I mean, I know Stewie's there. And,
yeah, I got Stuart and I got Steve Brown from the States. Right.
Oh, great. And okay,
cool. Even Garrett, he's had a few sessions as well.
Oh, good Garrett, man.
Garrett Warren, yeah.
Yeah. It's always tough to, you know, one of the things is, as you know, and, you know, that when you get into that sort of management sector of the department, your life essentially becomes zilch during the hours of filming. So if Garrett can find time to, well, good on him. I know it's probably forced because nowadays.
He's training all the time, man.
Well,
I don't know how. He just does it somehow.
Hmm. Well, you kind of need to as you get older as well, eh? I'm finding even more so now. I'm probably training more than ever now. And it's the things that I call training. It's just been being active, you know, because the moment you stop, you know that you've stopped. And and you feel every, you know, every beer or cream donut that you...
Yeah.
Christmas, you done?
Yeah, Chris, we finish December 18th. And then we're done. We're done.
Wow, that's quite an accomplishment. So you would have done all three avatars. Or four. Yeah. Or three avatars, isn't it?
Three, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Hey, so in the, I know I've asked you this in where does coordinating fit into where you're at? I know you're working as an assistant in many cases. Where's that sort of fitting into now that you've, now that you're clearly hearing that God saying you're not leaving?
Yeah, and, that's right.
So where does that kind of fit in right now?
Well, it's just, he opens the doors, you know, and I know that there'll be opportunities coming. At the moment, I'm actually just enjoying just rigging, you know. Really enjoying rigging, and it's, you know, like, you know, rigging yourself, like really just designing in your head, you know, like scenarios and systems that you do for certain stunts, and, you know, really enjoying that sort of thing at the moment. And I know that coordinating is going to be coming. It's just time is perfect, you know.
If you were to, and as much as it is for our listeners and it is for someone like yourself, you know, what are people like yourself, what's the magic formula you think to give you that next opportunity to cohorting? What, you feel you're ready? It's just a matter of like having the job to do so, or?
Well,
Do you think
I feel like I'm ready. Every day is different, right? So a lot of days I'm feeling ready as ever. But then you'll get a day where you're like, dude, like, am I half asleep? Or, you know, like, I need to wake up. So overall, I feel like I'm ready. But it's just, trusting in his timing, you know, that a door will open. And, you know, I've done heaps of little stuff, like coordinating like a couple of little shows and helping out Mark, covering with him and stuff like that. But it'd be good to assist under someone who's done a lot, you know. And like, you know, like you see Jacob and Clint and, you know, Sean Button and all those guys assisting and stuff like that. It would be cool to like do one of their roles, you know, like assist as well under someone who's done stuff, you know.
Do you find that, like, because of your experience that you may be. Because of your experience. Like I know when we were at, say, the last job that we were on for any length of time, and even the job that we did in Fiji together, they were easy jobs because they were easy and fun jobs because we were surrounded by like-minded people who had very similar experiences. In many ways, you know, I was a stunt coordinator and Andy was my assistant. But in reality, you know, we were just a bunch of mates who all knew what we were doing.
Yeah.
And assisting co-ord is, you know, just let a couple of people got credits as assistant co-ords, but in reality, you know, we all knew what we were on about. And I came to you and says, what do you think, Tony? And you go, yeah, sweet as. And we just like smash.
Yeah. I mean, you're only as good as your team, you know? I mean, like I said, like if an opportunity
how's the
opens up.
Well, when you look at that job in Fiji, because of that culture that we had, I was able to get into costume and do that burn and fall out that window. And, you know, Andy was able to take him out and, you know, smash him over and over again and roll down that bank. And, you know, it was just it's one of those jobs because we could. It was easy for me as a cohort to step out and go into costume because anybody one time could step into the assisting role and run the floor.
Yeah.
And that was the neat thing about that project. So like for, you know, like there was yourself, Adam Howell, Yasati, Yashushi.
There's a few.
Andy, you know, there's a few. They're all, you know, experienced, seasoned stuntmen and women. And, you know, and we've got Ashley and Tips and the list goes on.
Yeah.
That next generation.
Yeah.
Well, let's keep watching that space. And so here we go. And I just want to, before we end tonight, I just want to go back to the beginning.
Yeah.
A bit of a timeline of our relationship, because I think there was a gap there. I think that we kind of grew apart.
Yeah.
Because I was on Hercules and Xena really started the industry there, and that you started as a teenager and I was in my, early 20s. And then I went down to Wellington and worked on Lord of the Rings. Meanwhile, you continued in Auckland and we would have you guys come down to do some work. And after Lord of the Rings, and during that time as well, there was a whole lot of spin-offs of shows that was happening in Auckland, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Jack of all trades. And Cleopatra. And then you, Cleopatra, and later, and I remember you coming down and helped me out on Waterhorse. And
that's right.
And a few shows, and of course Narnia that we all did our time on. And it was that. So throughout the early 2000s, you know, we did all this stuff. Careers were, paths were crossing, and I lost track of where you ended up because I think and during those Narnia years, which was about three Narnias, did you get involved in all Narnia films, or were you tied up with all the TV stuff as well?
No, well, when I got asked for the first Narnia by Al, I already got asked before Al to double Adrian Brody on King Kong. So I accepted that. And then when Al asked me, I said, oh, bro, yeah, sorry, man, I'm on King Kong. And then from there, I didn't work on the other Narnias. I think I was on Hurt Locker when everyone went over to the other Narnias.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another, the last Narnia, I think, in Australia. I was going to be working, funny enough, I was going to be doubling Jesus Christ on that film that was going to be going here.
Oh, Kingdom Come.
What's Kingdom that? Come or something like that, yeah. Which I was, yeah, I was sort of like, whoa, hang on a minute, you know. But that ended up not going, you know. So
that was a really interesting time. I remember I was lined up to do, I was working somewhere and I was standing in knee-deep water. And I was, we were already in the discussions to do this movie called Hurt Locker. And then I was standing in knee-deep water. We were doing this film somewhere in the tropics, and Barry Osborne rings me up and says, hey, Argy.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Zan Zi? And I'm like, no. You know, and then he said Crouching Tiger. And then this phone conversation happened, and it's funny enough, I was there with Liz Tan. And we started talking about this movie. And so there was Hurt Locker going on, and The Warrior's Way was starting to rear its head. And also, it was a weird time. And then, and we just also had a little boy, and Hurt Locker, for what it was, you know, was, and I had to, it came down to a 1 week where I had to kind of decide. I'd done soft prep on both jobs, and you and I and Bomber, and we're going to head over, and yeah. I sort of pulled out, and pulled out because, you know, when I was doing the numbers, it was like, well, four guys in Jordan. I really wanted to go to Jordan so badly. And I rang Barry up and I said, Barry, what am I going to do? You want me to do this film, but I'm lined up to go to Jordan. And he goes, hey, don't worry about it, man. We'll go to Jordan some other time, but we need to do this film. But funny thing was,
yeah,
it was 6 weeks in Jordan versus 8 months on one movie and taking 25 stunties with me. And so all that Hurt Locker stuff was going, and Al had taken a Republic.
Yeah.
Everybody was able to get back from Narnia and Hurt Locker, and then we were still be able to work. And then all of a sudden Avatar popped up in Underworld, and the industry just kind of, we never saw each other for another 2 years.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So I think Meg was the next after that, I think.
Meg was after. Right. I mean, I think we're just brushing The Hobbit just under the blanket. It was kind of like 18 months that just kind of disappeared somewhere. And
yeah. Oh, that's right. Hobbit. Yeah.
And for me, The Hobbit was kind of an interesting job because I'd been, somebody said to me, because I gave my brother a kidney and going into general anesthetic, and somebody said, you know, it's going to take you a year to fully recover from this. And I did not know that a big part of that year was going to be in The Hobbit, because I'd turned it down a couple of times because the schedule didn't work. I was committed to something else. And then I finally ran out of options when I came into The Hobbit late. And I was kind of like, oh my goodness, what's happened? It's like hitting a time warp. We're back here again. And
it was an interesting couple of years on that one.
Yeah, I started swearing again on that job. Just
yeah,
and I dropped a lot more F-bombs than I normally would do on a good day, and but yeah, and then of course Bigelow was shooting the sequel to Hurt Locker during that time. Well, not a sequel, but she was doing what was that film that she did that she wanted the same people again?
Is that the one that Stu Thorpe went over?
Yeah, I remember getting the
I can't remember now.
My availability, and Yeah, it's the Osama bin Laden story. Yeah. And a whole bunch of Kiwis went over, which was great. And, you know, it's just funny how the industry that, because we've been in for so long now, you start to see a pattern of the same people again and again. And the areas that you've average job at, it was, you know, I mean, the classic thing is, you know, like I turned down Hurt Locker, it became film of the year. And, you know,
yeah,
it was kind of like, wow, all right, that's interesting. It happens. Yeah, went straight to DVD. Great job.
Straight to DVD.
I remember the first day. Yeah, I remember that job on the first day. You know, we had you know, these multiple ratchets people coming out of the pond, and then we fire burns, and it was kind of like, wow. And that was kind of the pace for by the end of that job, every stunt guy was setting up their own air rams, and they walked on set with a dive bottle in hand, with the accumulator, and walking and setting it up and getting ready for the shot. That's how we had to be really efficient on making those things work. Oh, it's like a bit trip down memory lane at the moment. So just want to, oh, there you go.
Cool. Yeah.
Before we kind of finish tonight, you know, and, you know, apart from, I guess maybe just dig a little bit deeper with you, just the, you obviously, you know, you've touched on it tonight, you know, there's a sense of a calling for what you're doing. And it's, you know, in my own life, I've had to kind of find a place where to put the business.
Yeah.
You're not human if you can just ignore the things that are going on in the world right now. It's complicated. Yeah,
that's right.
And you need to be, there are so many forces that are trying to sort of tell you what to think and what to believe.
Yeah, there's a spiritual battle going on, and it can happen in the mind, you know. So,
and do you think that and in terms of your film work and stunt work, so do you find do you feel a sense of purpose in what you're doing, because is it enabling you to act out what you believe and what you feel and exercise your role as a parent and as a husband? The industry is enabling you continually to do that?
I guess, to be honest, it's just about, it's like every day I'm growing, you know, I'm growing every day. And, because I'm growing, I'm seeing differently, you know. My perspective's always changing, like, and you know, I'm always looking for opportunities. Like every day I go to set, I'm looking for opportunities to give, but what am I giving? You know, that's what I'm thinking about, because it's not about how much you can get. It's about what you can give, you know? So every day I go to work, and this especially of late, it's just about what can I give? Because like I said before, always take your eyes off yourself, because there's people out there that you're working with that, you know, that you should really give them your time, you know, like, because you don't know what's happening in their life, you know? And sometimes when we're so fixated on us, on ourselves, we bypass these opportunities, you know, that your teammates or other crew members are crying out for your time, but you don't know it or you don't see it because your eyes are always on yourself. So every day I'm always looking for those opportunities. And don't get me wrong, I get bad days where I find it hard to look past myself, but praise God that he always reminds me, you know, to always, first off look to him and then through him see others. And, you know, this isn't just something that I'm making up here, you know, this is life. So yeah, that's basically the name. That's basically what I do now, you know. And this isn't something I've been doing for years. Like, I've grown into it, you know. Like, I started off preaching on set like all the time, you know, like in the earlier days. And then, you know, you go through your walk as a Christian, and then you know, you have your ups and downs, but eventually, as you trust in him, you grow and grow, and then that way you're able to give to others around you. And that's not, I'm not talking money, I'm just talking about life, you know, giving life, speaking truth. But hey, does that mean Tony's perfect? Of course not, you know. Every day I make mistakes, even on set, but thing is, the only thing I could do is just be honest and just say, hey, put my hand up. Hey guys, sorry, that was my fault, you know. Whereas 15 years ago, I'd be saying, hey, it's Bronson's fault, you know. So that's basically it. Yeah.
Well, I think back to when's the last time you prayed before you did a gig?
Oh, dude, literally this year, I'm praying all the time before gigs. Because throughout my whole career, there's only been a few times where I haven't prayed and I've had an accident. And that's no joke. Every time I've prayed, he's been faithful. And like, you know that when a big stunt's coming, you get all these imaginations get casted up, like, this is what's going to happen to you, Tony, or this is what's going to happen to you when you do this stunt. And then, you know, when you realize that it's a spiritual battle, that, you know, those imaginations are, or, you know, they're lies, then you just see the faithfulness in God. Like, you just keep remembering that he always comes through, and then bang, you know, every time. Like, I've had times where I've had to go to the toilet before a stunt. Pull my hair, hey guys, I need to go to the toilet first. They're like, oh, okay. And then I'd be praying, you know. And then I'd have to go and do the stunt and then pull it off. And everyone's like, bro, I don't know how you do that. And I'm like, in terms of how you do the stunt, you know? And I'm like, dude, trust me, dude, I'm panicking. You know, it's just the reality of the battle in the mind. And that's, you've got to capture every thought, and you've got to analyze the thought, and you've got to say, hang on, is this thought a lie or is it the truth? And if you take it as a lie, then you're probably going to have an accident. But if you don't take the lie on, then you're probably going to be all right, you know? So it's interesting.
How has over the years that your fellow stunties have responded to the way that you've lived, what you believe and stuff like that overall?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's a few of us around, you know? So it's not like they're all good. Everyone's pretty good. I've only had a few people that come against it, but I don't hold it against them, you know, because I just pray for them. That's it. But you know, I know I'm here just to. Just to do, you know, that's it.
Yep. No, look, I get it. I mean, it's very, sometimes it can be very unpopular to live out what you believe. And as in this day and age, when it's easy to just to put every Christian in a box
and put them in the right wing box or whatever it is, because everything's so politicized as well now. And
well, you know, everyone, a lot of people, you know, I'm it's saying, you know, I'm a Christian and this and that, but yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot to it, you know, it's not just saying it, and you know, it's just, it's in the actions and it's in what happens when you go home, and there's a lot to it, you know, like someone could be a great person and claim it to be someone, but then what are they doing when they go home? You know, that's the reality. So but now we're moving on to something else, you know.
Yeah. Hey, look, it's I know that babies probably going to wake up for a feed soon, eh? And you're on duty tonight, eh? It looks like you are. Dude, on guard.
I'm on guard, for sure. Got to help the wife, you know. I know.
We we're shifting house next weekend, so we've decided to spend a long weekend and pack it. We've done something really complicated. We're building a house which we haven't started. We've got the drawings, and we're renting. And for some reason, it makes more sense now to take about before we move a house. We haven't even agreed to a full plan and quote. It just seems like it's easier for us to buy a house and live in it and then sell it again when the house is finished rather than keep renting.
Wow.
So
whereabouts?
You know, we're down here at the Mount. Yeah. And we're building at the Mount as well. And, you know, it's one of those things, you know, like, you know, as we're talking and I think back, there was nowhere even in my early days of Stunts to be thinking the way I'm thinking now, even about money and,
yeah,
you know, sure, building houses and, you know, and even to be, and at the same time, we're looking at what are we doing over the next year project wise, you know, to be able to look at the choices that are available and see what rhymes with what I, with what's going on globally. And yeah, and at a personal level too, you know, I'm 50 years old and I've changed. I'm no longer, I'm a different person from when I started in the business. You know, I laugh differently and I love differently,
yeah,
and live very differently, you know, and, you know, wanting things to count. And obviously that changes the way I take on a job. And on the outside, it may look the same. You're still making movies and selling popcorn and putting bums on seats, but some of the outworkings of some of those decisions are much, the results are much more, what do you call it? Bigger and deeper, I guess.
Yeah, true.
You know, the podcast has been one of the byproducts of time. I was never in a position to do something like this 10 years ago because I was just not that person.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I've realized that some of the things work and, you know, I really take to heart what you said about, you know, to look to those who've tried and tested. And I hope that, that you and I have bits in our life that has been tested. And I know we've come through, I know yours certainly has, because I've watched you come through, and they were not easy years, you know. But, and you've, you know, you've been, how long have you guys been married now? You're well into your teens now.
14 years, and married.
Keeping a marriage going, and then this.
But I mean, there's challenging times coming up, you know, with COVID, and, you know, I don't see it getting any better, like, in the world, you know, like, I see a decline big time, you know. So yeah, let's just wait and see, you know.
Well, let's just keep in touch with each other. And
yeah, brother, yeah. Sounds good.
That's really cool, man. Hey, well, look, thanks for your time tonight. And I'm just gonna sign off here. This is Augie. I've been talking to Tony Marsh, stuntman. Check him out on IMDb. He's a fellow stuntie in New Zealand. We have a lot in common, but you know, he's been my little brother in the industry for as long. And we've gone tonight really just without any notes. We've just talked openly and very gratefully been able to come with each other. All right, bro. That was awesome, eh?
Thank you.
All right, bro. Yeah. No, thank you.
When are you off down again? On tomorrow night or?
Tomorrow night, yeah. Tomorrow night.
Wow. That's amazing.
And man, crazy job.
How's Stuart doing? Is he all right?
Yeah, he's all right. Yeah, you know, there's a lot. just he gets given a lot of work, you know, like a lot of the strain, like because he's the only one that really knows the stunt guys in New Zealand.